So, hello. And hello. There are about three times as many of you out there as there are in here, in countries all over the world. And I think you can actually hear us, which is really cool, because the last time... How many of you have been here before to one of these evenings? When the virtual thing doesn't work, it's kind of awkward talking to them, and they're just not there. That's how I feel whenever I do the radio show, actually, is I'm really talking to my wall, and I'm just hoping that I'm actually broadcasting and anyone can hear. I'm trying to think if we have any announcements. Logistics... The door that says restroom is the restroom. There is
kind
a secret second restroom downstairs. You go down that alley, down the stairs, past the skeleton, turn right through the unmarked door, and there's another restroom down there, if you dare. I don't know, there might be something else, but that's what I've found so far. And... I think that's as logistical as we need to get for today. So welcome. I am Michael Neal. I know a lot of you will know who I am. And my colleague, Dr. Mark Howard, I'm delighted to have him down again. This is our third time doing one of these?
Yeah,
we had Kathy Casey to kind of keep us apart last time. You know, kind of calm things down. Got a little out of hand. But... David, my friend David, who does the filming, was saying, you know, we wondered if we needed another set of extra cameras to cover the movement. And he said, well, I sort of remember Mark doesn't really move around.
Yeah.
So I think we'll be okay. We wanted to begin. Well, do you want to?
No, go ahead.
No, okay. So,
go ahead. Go ahead.
We wanted to begin just with a little bit of a history of self-improvement. So I did a little research. I say research. I went online and clicked in history of self-improvement. And sort of 1841. Anyone read Emerson's essay, Compensation? Yeah. I remember reading that. It's actually kind of cool. I was just in Concord, actually. I just went to the Emerson's house and just last weekend. It was kind of cool. All research for you guys, because I care. And that was the first time the phrase self-help, that wasn't when it wasn't talking about legal action, came up. And then in 1850-something, a guy named Samuel Smiles, anyone ever read? When the Bodhi Tree used to be open, I used to read all this.
That's a nice name for self-help, Smiles.
Samuel Smiles. I wonder if that was real. Kind of figure in the 19th century it hadn't occurred to people to make up names, but I'm sure it had. And it wrote a book called Self-Help. And that was it began with the first line was, Heaven helps those who help themselves. Mm. Now, I've always thought that you could argue that... Epictetus, ancient Greece, that you could call him the first self-help author. He was a Stoic. And if I'm remembering, if I can misquote him because it was in Greek, so this is just the translation I had. It's not that I'm making it up. But his book, I think it was the Enchiridion, began with a line that roughly said, there are things in life that you can control. And there are things in life that you cannot control. And the secret to happiness is knowing which is which. That feels like a good opening to a self-help book to me. So, you know, I think maybe this is an American bias that it started with Emerson. But then it kind of became a thing. Mm-hmm. Right? Most of self-help in the 19th century was kind of mixed in with Christian... manifestation, Christian New Thought. It was, you know, they were all ministers, and Ralph Waldo Trine and Thomas Troward, and it was all, Jesus will make you rich through the power of the mind, kind of thing. Kind of like Joel Osteen, actually, but a little. Just kidding. But actually some of that stuff's really well written, and it's you know, it still has some juice to it, but it was it was very connected to the spiritual. And it really was, for me, in the stuff that I read, because I used to devour this stuff. I used to, I was a 3-a-week minimum junkie. And then thanks to Mark Howard's spiritual aspects of recovery program, I'm much better now. But
you're much better now. You're down to 2.
I'm down to like 2-3 a month. It's great, man. I feel so much better about myself. But it started to get with Dale Carnegie, was sort of the first sort of best-selling self-help author of the 20th century. And that was where it sort of started becoming about what a lot of the self-improvement industry has become. It was about the personality. It was about how to appear confident, how to win friends and influence people. And then you had Think and Grow Rich. And I love this story. I've never been able to figure out if it was really true. But apparently, the original title of Think and Grow Rich was Use Your Noodle to Make a Boodle. And some bright spark said, I think we can do better. But that was sort of an interesting blend of the sort of Dale Carnegie personality-based stuff and some stuff that wouldn't look out of place in The Secret and Law of Attraction stuff that's very popular nowadays. Fast forward into the 60s. And I don't want to get myself into trouble here, but I think we're coming up on the era where you might actually have some experience.
You 60s, are early coming 70s? Close to my era.
All right.
Yes.
Right. But this was where sort of the age of the encounter group started to show up.
Yeah.
Where it was self-help, but it was really, 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 really focused not on promoting the shiny, happy aspects of our personality, but on fixing everything that was wrong with us. Mm-hmm. When did you jump in? Like, what was your first self-help thing?
I think it started in graduate school, in my doctoral program as a psychologist, because the minute you enter the program, you've got to improve. there's always something that you've got to take a look at for yourself and get better at. And so I'd say that's around the late 60s, early 70s,
okay.
But then I came to UCSF in San Francisco for a fellowship in 75. And that was the zenith of the human potential movement and self-help. And every neighborhood you could find one of the leaders of one of the self-help movements, Fritz Perls for Gestalt therapy. Anybody who was anybody was there in San Francisco, and you could go listen to them, and learn how much more you needed to improve, And so it was always interesting to me, until I came upon the understanding we're going to talk about with you tonight, how much... when I would sit and listen, I would see how much I needed to know. And the other piece was, I was always comparing myself to the person who was teaching, who seemed to know it so much more than I did. So even though there may be a grain of truth in it, I left feeling, oh my God, there's still quite a bit more to do. But that was at the beginnings of, at that time was the beginnings of all these new approaches to helping people, family therapy, Virginia Satir. I don't know if any of you know the names. The beginnings of NLP happened around that time. So there was a lot of richness in the self-help movement.
Yeah. Richard Bandler told me a story about that he was neighbors with Werner Erhard. And they used to get into fights about where Werner parked his car. I love that this, this is, because they really had it together. From the front of the room. I came in the mid '80s. So Shakti Gawain, creative visualization, the Silva method was probably in the '50s. The big spark for a lot of these movements. Werner Erhard was a Silva teacher. Shakti Gawain was a Silva teacher. Alexander Everett was a Silva teacher, and that was sort of the power of the mind. And And then the empowerment movement really kind of took off in the 80s. And that was sort of a swing back to what's right with you. And away from the we're going to call you an asshole and tell you what's wrong with you until you get over it. And then you get it. Right? You can always spot who's done-est. I actually worked at a bookshop, in a New Age bookshop in London called The Mystic Trader in the late 80s, early 90s. And the big courses in London at the time were The Forum and Insight. And literally everyone who came into the shop had done at least one. And it became a game that we would play, is Insider Forum. And we take bets behind the counter. And I got extremely, extremely good at it. I had the highest. It's like fantasy football for New Age people, I guess. But it was like. But my trick was awful, because my trick was that I'd figured out that I took an instant dislike to everyone who had done the forum. No, I actually have since come across the program, and it's actually there's a lot I like about it. But there was something energetically about it that I just. It made me cringe at the time, and it was quite funny how predictable it was. And then I'll get personal the story, and then maybe you can as well.
Okay.
because at that point, yeah, I was no longer an objective observer of the industry. At that point, I was a participating member, and if I use the word perpetrator, that might give too much away, but I was a I was a part of it, and I was fascinated by it, and I was obsessed with it. I mean, it was literally, I was theoretically an actor, and I was working and being paid as an actor in London, but all of my spare time was spent reading, listening, studying, and teaching. So I went from the spiritual, so the first thing I came across after Shakti Gawain was a guy named Barry Long. I don't remember Barry Long, Australian spiritual teacher, and he had a book called Knowing Yourself, and it was this yellow book, and all it just said was Knowing Yourself. I thought, ooh. So I read it to know myself, and I remember what I got from my time studying with Barry Long was a really nice feeling. And he said, and I remember him saying this, and in the light of what we're going to be talking about today, this actually seems relevant in a way that it didn't for many years. He said, really? I'm sitting up here talking with you to distract you so that you'll sit in your chair long enough to know yourself. I thought, ooh. But it didn't really mean anything to me.
Yeah, it didn't, yeah.
Like I was like, okay, cool, I guess. And then for me, the big shift. So I worked for a guy named Stuart Wilde, and he sort of took me and Davey on as his young apprentice, and we'd build the fire for the firewalks and do stuff that I can't talk about on camera, and it was, what was really cool about it was it was the first time that I started to see that self-help was taught by human beings. So it's sort of what you were saying. Up until that point, anyone on stage was perfect, or certainly way better than me. And so there was something aspirational about being that person.
Mm-hmm.
And getting to know Stuart kind of cured me of that, mostly. Because he was just a guy. And I actually loved him. I became the greatest Stuart Wilde apologist in the UK. Because people would say stuff about him, and most of it was true. But Stuart never pretended that it wasn't. And I really liked that. Like, I liked the fact that he didn't say, I'm whiter than driven snow. You know, he was who he was. And there was something that speaks to, again, where we're going. Something about a willingness to be human, which is not intrinsically a part of a lot of the self-improvement movement. We're supposed to be better than human, right? We're supposed to be superhuman. We're supposed to be human plus. That's kind of the idea. Well, if I do enough of this, surely I won't have these problems anymore. Surely I won't get upset with my partner anymore. I won't get upset with my kids. you know, surely if I do enough self-improvement, I won't be so judgmental. You know, surely if I do enough self-improvement, I'll love everyone, including that asshole over there. Right? You know, and it's this idea that the ultimate goal is to not be like everyone else, to not have the feelings that everyone has, to not have the ups and downs that everybody has, to somehow transcend the genre of human being. And it's an interesting idea, because if that's what self-improvement means to you, you're kind of screwed before you start. So we'll talk more about that. But for me, where that took me to was NLP. And the way I got into NLP was Stuart actually said, hey, there's this guy in America that's doing, I was living in England, so there's this guy in this America that's doing firewalks as well, because Stuart did firewalks. You should check him out. And so I looked him up. He wasn't, you know, anyone I'd heard of. And he had this book out called Unlimited Power, and so I picked that up. It was late 80s, and I read it, and there was a technique, because that's self-improvement, right? It's techniques. Tools and techniques. That's what everyone's looking for. 7 steps to this, 4 ways to that, 19 ways. Robert Holden actually does a whole thing where he actually has found like 736 ways to get laid. You know, 482 ways to improve your sex life. 119 ways to find confidence. And so I'm reading this, and technique number 4, or whatever it was about turning down the volume on the inner voice. And I thought, cool. So I did that. I reached up and found the knob, like it said in the book. Now, what was interesting was it got quiet. Now, I was a depressed, miserable person. And that was... turned out that was because it was so noisy in here, and I couldn't hear or feel what was underneath the noise. I didn't know that then. But so when I had that experience of it getting quiet, and it was honestly the first time I could remember it being quiet since I was 17, and I was in my 23, 24 around this time, I didn't get that what was happening was I was touching something real. I didn't get that that wasn't an act of self-improvement. That was actually getting the self out of the way long enough, the little self, to touch something bigger. The big self, I guess. And so consequently, I did what anyone would do and spent the next 15 years studying NLP and becoming an NLP master trainer and doing all that, because it seemed to me like that was what had, like, dance with the girl you brought to the party. I don't know if anyone else grew up with that one, but, like, you know, it's like, this is how I learned to do it, so this is what I'm going to do. And I remember, it wasn't that many years ago, it was 2010, it being in Santa Monica with Robert Holden, and we were looking at a hotel to teach at, and it turned out that it was the hotel where I'd done my first NLP training. And I realized that had anyone told me that what I was looking for was already there, I would have saved 15 years. Yeah. Now, as it happened, it was a really interesting 15 years. I can't say I really begrudge it. You know, it was good to me. It was neat. But it was also a bit of a shock to realize just how much of my life and life energy had been spent looking for something that I already had. And I felt just a wee bit of an idiot. But also I felt fun.
Yeah.
Because how was I to know? Nobody told me. Mm-hmm. And if they had, I wouldn't have believed. So we had talked that we might share stories, but like, what was your version?
I was fortunate that I found the understanding you're starting to speak to much sooner. I was just lucky.
Yeah.
And like you, but in a different way, more in psychology based, I would try to learn the newest thing. And I could do the newest thing, but it didn't have the feeling. It had a feeling to it, but not really a truth feeling of wellness. You know, and I remember one day with a client, I had just read this new book on conditioning therapy. And what you did was you had somebody do what they were most afraid to do, and then you gave them what they like, you gave them a reward. So here I am at a Kaiser clinic. Now here, now
you've this been eaten by a shark, here's a cookie.
Yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
I like it.
Yeah. Put your toe in the water, here's an M&M. Well, actually in Seinfeld, Big Bang Theory, anybody
watch
that?
That's right, yeah.
Sheldon tried to do that conditioning with, I forgot her name, but anyhow, picture this. I was newly hired at Kaiser. They had all moved to the remodeled clinic. I was left in the old clinic that had walls torn out. I had to find my own office and move furniture. So there was a lot of walls that were just, you know, dilapidated. So it worked well because this guy was he was a handyman. And he was always afraid to be alone with the person who hired him while he was doing work. So I'm thinking, I'm going to do this conditioning. I'm going to have him nail stuff. And he liked candy, so I'm going to give him a candy each time he felt okay. I started doing it, and all of a sudden I woke up and said, this is ridiculous. This isn't what it's about. It's about trying to connect and touch a human being. And I just don't know how to find that. And so what I was lucky about is I went searching for that because you were depressed. I was an angry man. I mean, not physically so, but, you know, I was raised as a man that your way was the right way and debate everything. So I'd be in a meeting with my colleagues. They'd say about something they were doing, and I'd debate it. And at home, I'd get in arguments with my wife. But it was a really nice marriage, but I would get in arguments. And finally, I said, I had enough of this, and somebody had heard of this person who had a spiritual enlightenment. And I went to hear him. And the first thing I heard was, you have it within you. It's the first time I went to someone who was going to teach something spiritually or something about getting better or improvement that had nothing about it for them. I heard it. I saw that he had nothing. It wasn't about him. He had no approach. There was no approach. Except I heard, you have everything you're looking for already in you. The happiness, the well-being that you're looking for, the self-esteem is already in you, as Michael says. It's there. And when he said that, it woke that up. I felt it. I touched it. And I had a nice feeling. I had a really nice feeling. I said, this is what I was looking for my whole life. This is it. It's already here. It's really funny how you go searching all over the place, you know, all these other self-improvement approaches that I went to, maybe 20 different training, different approaches and trainings, and it was already in me. And now it just really made sense, and it woke something up in me about that. And then I heard that the other piece that he was sharing is that is spiritual. That it isn't within your physical form, but it's a spiritual essence that you are. That is what you are really a part of. You are connected to that. And he called that mind. And he was saying that is the intelligence of all life, of all the intelligence before the universe. That's what gives life. And you are a part of that. And so is everyone else. Oh my God. That, I mean, I didn't understand that. I could not get my head around it, because you can't get your head around a spiritual understanding, but it rang true. And that moment I saw, you know, one of the things about psychology, psychiatry, mental health is you diagnose. What this showed me is everyone has within them at that moment everything they're looking for. The health we're trying to help people find is already there. And what you're diagnosing is just the level at which they're functioning, but they also have that connection to this spiritual energy, this well-being, whatever you want to put a form around, that's what they have. And it shifted me, because now my job wasn't to diagnose and treat that diagnosis. My job was to wake up in them the same thing that started to wake up in me. Now, this understanding that Michael and I are going to talk with you about is what allows you to see that you have it within yourself and don't need to do a self-improvement thing. You don't need to do anything, because how can you improve on the intelligence of all life, you know? How can you go do learn something to improve on the fact that you are the intelligence of the universe? How do you improve on that, you know? Where do you even start? So once you start to get a sense of what we're going to point to tonight with you in our discussions, it's like it allows you the free choice, the free will to decide how you want to look at yourself around making any changes. So prior to this, making changes was coming from being judgmental. Oh man, you got to be more generous. You got to be a better listener when your wife talks to you. You've got to, you know, it was all around that. Now, it just kind of occurs to me that it might be nice if I didn't worry so much. But as you were saying so nicely, I'm human. I could accept that I'm human, and I don't have to go do anything about noticing that I could worry less. I don't have to do a technique or anything. I could kind of wait and see what my being a part of this intelligence will help me see. So it's a whole different way of looking at something that you might want to get better at. Taking yourself in stride rather than having to work on yourself. So immediately, the story on that is immediately, one other piece, can I share one other piece of that?
Of course.
This is going okay for you?
How's he doing?
Yeah.
Is he okay? Yeah, we're good. Yeah, all right. Yeah, you're good. Let me know if
there's,
I need to stop.
So there it is. See? There it is. There's a little thought there. You get it? So I came down a bit and got concerned. Anyhow, there was one other piece. I want to share the piece because I want to show you what's the potential every human being has. The other piece I heard that night is, I make up my emotions. I make up my feelings. In the self-help movement that I went through, most of it was about getting in touch with those feelings. See what they had to say to you. Don't suppress them. And get them out. So a lot of the things I went through were exercises for me to get all these emotions out. The trouble was, I never got over those emotions. You know, I'd show up at the next encounter group or whatever, and I'd have the same feeling. Okay, go ahead, start pounding a pillow, get that anger out. But here, I really heard, I make up my emotions through the gift you have to create thinking. The gift you have to have thought and have that thought look like a reality to you, look like a truth to you, that's what's creating your emotions. So that all that whole package shifted me to the point where there was nothing more to do about self-improvement. There was nothing more to teach people. There was nothing more for me to go read or to go to a training for. I just wanted to deepen my understanding of what I had been able to see as this person was talking about the spiritual understanding he had. And the certainty I felt of how true that was. Because it's another thing, I don't know if you've experienced kind of insights for yourself, but all that I'm sharing with you came out of the blue. It wasn't anything I had read. You know, when I would teach before or when I would try to practice my own self-help, it was trying to take what other people had shared with me and apply that. But this kind of just occurred to me at a very deep level and had this truth value that I shifted. Now, what I saw as I left was, if I could understand this, I'd be happy. I'd be content, and my clients would be happy. I'd be happy across the board in my marriage, at work. I just saw how that would be possible because I already had it within me. I already had it. And I had, and I just had to, and not really had to, but I just saw that if I could see that all that I am responding to is being created through the way I think, through this beautiful, beautiful gift I have to create thinking. That's all that it was. That's all I needed to keep a look toward. I'd be fine. So that happened just 5 years into my self-help journey. And I was really blessed, you know, I was really blessed. And maybe, you know, like, in the sense that I don't know why I heard that, you know. I don't know why I did. There wasn't any technique to hearing that. Because I was with 30 other people, and when I left, I said, did you hear this? Did you hear what you've got inside of you? Did you hear that you're an intelligence of the universe? And they said, no, I don't really get, what are you talking about, you know? Yeah. So so I think, so I'm just saying that that's where I was lucky about being able to see it so early on.
You know, it's funny because, to know why I was thinking of this as you're saying it, you know the old joke about the self-help section in the bookshop that any good bookseller will never give you directions to find it. Got it? Yeah. That's the right, because it's what Mark was saying about finding it in himself. It's not taught that way. It's not like I can give it to you.
Yeah.
Right? I can make you. I can do this for you. I can make you confident in this and that and the other. And so self-help becomes an odd notion, but another thing that was occurring to me as you were talking, there's sort of three levels that I can see in my self-improvement journey. And I'm just going to use these words. This isn't necessarily how other people use these words. But at a kind of the lowest level, self-help was the right word because I was broken and I needed help. I wasn't good enough, and I needed help. I wasn't blank enough. I wasn't happy enough. I wasn't strong enough. I wasn't man enough. I wasn't happy enough. I wasn't confident enough. I wasn't rich enough. Man, was I not enough? Whatever you need, I didn't have enough of it. Right? So I was on a self-help journey. I wanted help with the problems that I myself was having. And at that level, that looked like a pretty good use of my time and money. Like, it made sense, given how broken I was. That made sense. Now, what I didn't see was that I was taking the human experience, judging some of it as good and some of it as bad,
and then trying to fix the stuff that I made up as bad. So I was deciding that the days where I was really calm and present with somebody were the right way to be, and the days where I got pissed off with them was the wrong way to be, and then I needed help with the wrong way to be. I would make up that the days where I was in touch with this intelligence, whether I thought of it that way or not, but I was quiet enough that I could hear wisdom. I kind of just knew what to do. Well, that was good me, but then bad me would come along, and he'd do things for the wrong reasons, and so he needed help. And it was this continual schism between good me and bad me. And bad me was around more of the time, and it was around enough time to keep a lot of people in business. I used to, you know, I think I kept the bookshops I managed in business by all the stock, even at the discount that I would buy. And you know, we were talking to somebody this morning who was saying that his ideal client was somebody with low self-esteem and a slow learning curve. You know? That was me. I was their perfect client, right? Well, at some point, I did get a little bit of a leap in consciousness. I did get a different perspective on what was going on with me. And at that point, I went from self-help to self-improvement. Because it no longer seemed true to me that I was broken, but I could be better. Right? So at this level, I was fundamentally flawed and needed help. Now then I got to a level where, hey, you know what? I'm not so bad. I'm all right. You know, I'm human. This is good. This is good, but I could be better. Right? We can rebuild him. We can make him faster, stronger. Apparently they're making a remake of the $6 million man with Mark Wahlberg, but it's going to be the $6 billion man because that's bigger. Right? And that's when I went from self-help to self-improvement, because now I could go on forever. Right? And I actually even used to draw it on my courses when I was teaching, that it was the difference of going from, you know, being human, you got your ups, you got your downs, but if you're self-improving, now your ups keep getting better and your downs keep getting better. Whee! Right? And look, it was progress, right? This was so much more fun, because now I still had a ton to do to get better, but it was all good, right? You know, starting from an idea that it was all good. And I remember sitting down with Keith Blevins, a colleague of ours, and I, you know, this was what the world looked like in my head. And he said, well, wow, it doesn't look like that to me at all. And I was like, oh, well, I could teach you. But I held back because, you know, I always figure when I'm paying them, I should shut up a little bit of the time. And he drew something that looked like this. He said, well, it looks to me like you go about your life, and then at some point, you get an insight. You see something, like Mark was saying. You see something for yourself. You see something true. And at that point, it's like the game goes on, but it goes on at a whole other level. And there's really almost no connection between how it was before and how it is now. It's not self-improvement. It's literally like a new self, like something new has come into being. And then it can happen again. And then, you know, and there's, you know, in the way he was saying it to me, there's infinite levels. Mm-hmm. Right? That process can go on forever as we get higher and higher in consciousness. And I remember looking at that and looking at that in my head and looking at that on his flip chart and thinking, one of us is really missing something. But now at least I thought it might be me. Right? I was a little bit open to it. And that was when he showed me Sid Banks' video. Because up until that point, like, I knew these guys taught something that they didn't seem to know what it was and didn't seem to be able to talk about it in my mind, right? They were saying it was inside me, and I was like, yeah, I know that. I teach people that too, right? But I didn't get that.
I didn't get that at all. I got it up here. But if you looked at my life, I didn't, you know, I mean, I might have cut down from 3,000 self-help books, which is what I had at one point, to 1,500. You know, but that still suggested I thought it might be somewhere outside me, right? To the wise observer, which I was not. Well, so he shows me this video of this guy, Sid Banks. I'm like, oh, God, a guru. I did gurus. It was kind of fun when I was 20, but, like, you know, I don't want to do that again. But you know, I paid. I was there. There was nothing else to do. And I figured I'd watch the video, and then there was I think it was a Giants-Mariners game on. So I was going to watch the baseball as soon as I got through the video that I promised him I'd watch. And so I'm sitting there, and I write about this in the book. Some of you know the story. I'm sort of watching and sort of drinking, and I just hear him say, "Every human being has innate mental health." Beer comes out my nose. I start coughing and sputtering and laughing. Because somehow it was so obviously true to me in that moment. And it was one of these. This looked true, or really that looked true to me. And then suddenly it just didn't. It was completely different afterwards than before. Now that was really disconcerting to me at the time. Because I was a self-improvement guy. I was the key. If it's to be, it's up to me. That's the key to self-improvement, is it has to rhyme. Okay? Yeah.
You know.
It feels that way sometimes. But it was. It was a completely new seeing. And it was obvious. I couldn't go back. It wasn't like, oh, that's an interesting alternative idea. That flip chart or this flip chart. Yeah. It just... It was a whole different... And that was when I went, oh... That's an insight. That is a sight from within. I saw something. Now, sure, the guy said something, but honestly, I probably have heard that before. I'm sure I've heard that before. Right? It wasn't that radical an idea. You know, it's like saying, you know, happiness is inside you. Oh, okay. Right? I mean, it's sort of the test for insight, and I apologize, this is going to be my first bit of swearing, but you'll... It goes on, so just kind of let's get it over with. But it's like when I'm looking at somebody, the way I know whether or not they've seen it at an insightful level, as opposed to they get the idea, is if they're not saying, "Holy fucking mother of God," they haven't had an insight. It's that obvious. It's that fundamental. It's that I make up my feelings. I have been spending all this time punching pillows to get these real feelings out that I made up. I mean, you're never going to punch a pillow again except to take out your aggression at the guy who told you you were supposed to punch pillows, maybe. Right? You know, once you see it at that level, it's just different. So this was sort of where it went from self-help, I'm broken. It went to self-improvement. I'm not broken, but I can get better, to something else. And as I started to see it, I kind of have to go up one to try and say what I saw. What I started to see is, I made up myself. Like, how can I improve persona that I made up in the first place? How can a persona that I made up be broken? So, there was a real and solid me that was broken. Then there was a real and solid me that wasn't broken. And then I started to see there wasn't a real and solid me at that level, at the level of that little s self. Well, that was just made up of thought. Habits of thought. You know, enough people tell you that your name is Bob and you're Bob. Right? We actually did that at school. We created a guy named Joe. my two best friends, they had this third roommate, and he hadn't arrived at the beginning of the school year. And so people would go, is your third roommate here? Joe? Oh, no, Joe's not here yet. So by the time this guy arrived about a week into the school year, everyone went, oh, you're Joe. Now, his name was actually William. But the problem was, everyone called him Joe. And his parents, when they would call for William, nobody knew who William was, because this was pre-cell phones. It was just and finally, they learned to ask for Joe. And by the end of that year, he was Joe. Right? It's that made up. Right? Except you're not as involved in it being made up when you're a little kid. It's like they keep calling me Billy. I guess I'm Billy. Okay. Right? And the very idea of self-improvement becomes a really odd idea if there's no self, no fixed self to improve. Now, I so wish I had a point. Like, I do. I wish I was going somewhere with this. But I don't. Like, that's what I've seen.
Yeah.
That's kind of, I mean, in a way, like, I'm glad that we've gotten this far in and haven't resorted to what the only thing I could think of when I was thinking about what we would talk about tonight, which was stop it.
Stop it?
Yeah.
It's
like, how to improve your self-improvement. Stop it. Right? Right? And I thought, that's only going to go so far. But not stop it because it's bad or wrong and that's the new way that you're broken is you're trying to improve yourself. But why would you? Given that who you are is more akin to this intelligence behind life, this infinite intelligence, this infinite creative potential.
Yeah.
What is there to improve? You know, from my daughter has tweeted me once, right? My 17-year-old daughter, and she was doing a training in New York, and she tweeted that I had said, "You are the infinite creative potential of the entire fucking universe. Deal with it." And then it said, "Dad," right? But that's where we're starting. How are you going to improve on that? And that's why there's nothing to do, but there is something to see. Because if you, I can say that, right? Mark can say that. Sid can say that. But until you're saying, holy fucking mother of God, because you see it, then it's just a conversation. Nothing's changed. It's just another nice idea to put in the nice idea pile. Mm-hmm. And bring out at parties to impress cute girls. Or cute boys. Right.
Yeah, you know, when you were talking about, we just keep reminding ourselves who we are. My wife is really happy that I keep knowing who she is, you know, that I wake up and say, oh, that's Becky, oh yeah.
Yeah.
I love what you said because, you know, really, the truth of the matter, really, if we're going to be at that level, is we are this energy creating our lives moment to moment. We're creating a reality moment to moment, and that's a beautiful thing. You know, that allows us to stay here, you know, and enjoy life. And it comes through this ability we have to think. And, you know, we're this creative energy, we're creating all the time. It looks like a continuous process, really. It looks like it's continuous, but really, every moment we're creating a new reality we're living in. And so, we're talking about a whole different dimension. I mean, there isn't even self-improvement. There isn't any idea of self-improvement on this, with this understanding. And isn't it something that you can wake up to this? I think for me, that's been the most potent, deep feeling, is that you can wake up, have insights to the spiritual essence of life and what you are. You can wake up to this. You can wake up that you are creating an issue between you and your partner. that issue is not real. It looks real when you give it your attention, when you give it your energy. It looks like an issue. My wife is saying, when are you going to stop asking me questions? She's got an issue with, that's a real issue with her about me, you know. And I do ask questions. But when you realize you are creating an issue through thought, that insight allows you then to be free. It's nothing. So you get bothered by something. As you're saying, you're just in the human condition. Understanding what we're saying, even at the deep level at which Michael's been talking about it, doesn't mean you stop getting bothered or having a whole range of feelings. What I've seen it mean is that you wake up to what's going on again. You see that you wake up to the insights you've had about your nature. I tell this story a lot, but my wife and I mean, she's saying, are you going to tell more stories, you know, about us again, you know? But that's what I do, you know. For me, metaphors don't come up. These stories come up. But we... several years ago, we treated ourselves to a luxury car. We never had like a real luxury car. And this one has, you know, those dual controls for air. But you know what? I don't know if you've noticed it. They don't work perfectly. Like the warmth that she likes, it seeps over to me. It does not really just get on her side. So when we're leaving, I want it cool. And she wants it warm. And at times, I can look at it because I have the power to think about it and make something of it. See, I can make something of it. And when I don't know what we're pointing to, it doesn't look like I'm making something up about it. It looks like, here we go again. Can't she ever just let me be cool for a bit? You see, that's what it looks like, right? When you see, that's how it works. When you create, you live in it. Whatever you're creating, you're living in it. When you were talking about the self and the true self, I thought of Halloween costumes. You know how kids, you know Halloween, you just get into Halloween. Anybody have kids or see kids who really get into their Halloween? They're their character. That's the self they are. But there is something else truer underneath that costume. But anyhow, when you create through this power you have to create...
Mark, that was a metaphor.
Oh. Hey, right? High five.
He always says you can't do them. That was really good.
I'm going to write that down. My wife will be so happy. No more couples stories. I just want you to see, when you create and you're in it, it doesn't look, you don't know you're creating it. You're in the reality of your thinking. That's what I saw that night. I make it up. But until I realize once again I'm making it up, I'm in it. And but so what happens, the only reason I'm telling you this story is that along the ride in a couple of, you know, blocks, I wake up again. So you have an insight. You have an understanding of the true nature we're pointing to at the level of realization and insight. Rather than a strategy or something put into you to practice, and it comes back. Now you can't make it come back, but it comes back. That's what I've seen. So then I'll remember what I'm telling you along the way, and I'll realize, oh my God, there I go again. My thinking went south, you know. Now here's the beauty of what we're connected to. You get the solution. So once you touch, now you don't really touch it, but I don't know how this, it's a mystery how you wake up again to the truth. But you do. And then you get thoughts of how to take care of business. You really do. There's a wisdom here. You've shared, you know, you mentioned there's a wisdom here, an intelligence. Remember, you are connected to the intelligence of the universe. And this intelligence is there to assist you. You are that, so it will assist you everywhere. It will. It will assist you. So how does it play out for me? It plays out, okay, you went south. Now what are you going to do? You know? Oh, why don't you apologize? Get the feeling back that you wanted to have for the day. Get the feeling back. There's nothing to it. All you got to do is get the feeling back. You're thinking was off. So I say that to Becky. Sorry about that. My thinking went south. Look, let's just get the feeling back with how we wanted to go about the day. So this is just a story. I mean, we do fine with all of this. We do really, really well. And this has deepened the love that I didn't really know was there to find. It's so deep. But I just wanted to tell you the story to let you see what you are, to keep pointing back toward you're not in the game of improving anything. It's outside of that whole realm. You're in a whole different ballpark. In the whole different ballpark playing the game of life, but from a different understanding. Over here, it's like in San Francisco, they tore down the old baseball stadium that they built. It was called Candlestick Park. For those of you in other countries,
baseball is a game played with four, five, and six. Where nine men run around in circles. It's really very good.
I'm going to another metaphor, but now I'm wondering, is this going to fit for everybody, you know? So they tore down this stadium, and they had built this beautiful new stadium for this major league team to play in. And that's what's happening with this understanding. You're not even the same ball game. You're not in the same ballpark. It's not. See, here's the thing about self-improvement. Self-improvement is about your thought system. It's about your belief system. It's about the form that the spiritual power of thought takes. It's about the ideas you create, see, and making them better. But we're talking about something that is what you are that creates that. See? So there's nothing to improve on this system because that's what's providing you life and providing you an experience of life moment to moment. The improvement, the self-improvement programs were really about the form you've created. You get that? They're about the personality you create with your thinking. See?
Just to pick up on it, they're about givens.
Yeah.
Given that I'm shy, what's my best way to handle social interaction? Given that I'm a bit of a skittish person, what's my best way to make a good impression? Given that I'm not good with money, how can I learn to do okay in the world anyways? Right? But you made up shy.
Yeah.
Because you took those times where you acted in ways that are called shy and decided those were you, and the times where you acted in ways that aren't shy, and those were weird anomalies. I don't know what was going on that day. And we either totally don't notice them, or we excuse them. Oh, well, that's because I was drunk. Oh, well, that's because I'd had a good day. Oh, well, that's because, and we have some reason why we behaved out of character that day. So we've decided what our character is and isn't and does and doesn't do. And anything outside of that, well, there's a reason for it. Given that I'm not very bright, what's a good study strategy? Given that I'm dealing with difficult people, because I can project it out of me too,
right? Given that this is a difficult person, how can I connect to them more deeply, right? Given that my husband is a moron, how can I keep our marriage together? That's just a personal one. It's been leveled at me once or twice. But once you have givens, once you accept any aspect of our character, and I think that's a really well-chosen word, our character, like our Halloween costume. Given, once we take our character as a given, yeah, there's all sorts of self-improvement strategies that we need, both to improve our character and to help our character make his or her way in the world. But you are not your character any more than your kid is what they're dressing up as for Halloween. And that's a whole different conversation. Mm-hmm. Can we check in with them?
Sure.
So here's what I'd like to do. So it's a small room, so we could hear you, but there's a big room out there in the world. Hello, world, again. And so we're going to ask, if you have a question or comment, just raise your hand. We'll get a microphone to you. And that's so for the people out there, they can hear. And what I'd love to hear, and I know Mark would as well, because I learned this from him, really. We were talking about that earlier, is what are you hearing? Just what are you hearing? What are you hearing that makes sense? What are you hearing that doesn't? What are you seeing for yourself? What are you hearing from inside? What are you hearing from us? Over to you. So just raise your hand and a microphone will find its way to you. Yeah, Christine. You were so close, Nita. You almost got there, but you just...
I'm just really resonating with what both of you are saying. And I love this diagram here to the left about how it's just a different ball game, different ballpark. Mm-hmm. And what I really heard is, for so long I identified myself as broken. That was my self-help phase.
Yeah.
I was broken. And then once I realized, okay, I'm not broken, because pieces started to come back together, it was like, oh, well, then I need to upgrade. So that was next. And it wasn't until I actually had a moment of, I called it my God moment, of that knowing who I was at a deeper level, that it shifted for me. But what I really appreciate is, I'm glad I had the misunderstanding I was broken. And I'm glad I had the misunderstanding that I needed to improve myself, because that got me to the aha insight. Like, it's like I had to know that contrast to get to the new awareness. So I'm grateful for all the phases of it.
Yeah. Now, here's what's interesting to me. Mm-hmm. And I don't know if you found this, because that was my journey, right? I mean, I was saying it. And for a while, it was really pissing me off that all these people would come along on these seminars and get it and see it for themselves right away, and they hadn't gone through any of the phases. So I'm kind of with you in the sense that, you know, it's like, look, I don't regret what I went through. Mm-hmm. But I've been seeing that actually you don't have to go through any of that. There are people who just wake up to it, and they're there. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of neat, too. That it's not even a process, right? That I talked about that as a self-directed process, right? I get that's not what you're saying at all. But actually, it's a leap. You know the expression from A Course in Miracles that there's no order of difficulty in miracles?
Yeah.
Right? Transforming water into wine is no more or less difficulty than transforming it into a lizard creature. That's not really biblical as a reference, but you know that there's no... There. When we're in this realm, there is no path. Like here, for me, is the difference between. Yeah. Sorry, I'm completely extrapolating. I've completely left behind what you said because. But it was a beautiful jumping off point. So mindfulness. Like I look at this and I see mindfulness as a practice, right? It's because it's kind of like what we're talking about, right? Where I kind of wake up to myself more and more, and then I fall back asleep, but I'm working on mindfulness, so I wake up to myself even more, and then I fall back asleep, but I'm practicing mindfulness, so I wait, and it gets better, right? I'm awake to myself more of the time. But by way of contrast, imagine a kid who hasn't figured out that he's going to wake up again in the morning.
no matter what. Can you imagine how scared he would be to fall back asleep? That's the problem with that kind of model, is it's intrinsically fear-based. Because the idea, if we go unconscious, we might not come back. If we forget, we might never remember again. Well, that's not how it works. That's just not what it is to be human. We're designed to fall asleep, and we're designed to wake up. And it's kind of no big deal. Now, it can be. I mean, I know people have sleep issues and stuff like that, but even the people with sleep issues fall asleep and wake up. Yeah. Right? And there's something,
at some point,
there's something kind of extraordinary to me in seeing that I don't even have to do that. I don't even have to remember. Even that isn't my job. You know, I find myself sometimes in one of these for quite a while, right, where it seems like I haven't had any insights, I haven't had any shifts. I seem to go through the same pattern every time, where I get frustrated because I think I'm supposed to be having shifts, right? Because I forget that it's that and not that. I think I'm involved. I'm in charge now. I've actually heard myself say in my head, thanks God, I'll take it from here. Right? You know, because I'm so close. But then there comes a point where I kind of get, you know what? It doesn't have to get any better. And that's what I hear in what you're saying. You found something where it didn't have to get any better anymore. And funnily enough, that's usually around the time that you find yourself in a new ballpark, playing a new game. That's beautiful. Thank you.
Yeah, that's what I heard. I heard when you had that insight, your God moment, you were grateful.
Yeah.
You were grateful, and you looked out to see what you were grateful for having gone through. And so a couple of things. When I shared with you that evening, you know, and I saw all that I saw and realized, when I went back the next day to do work with my clients, I could not go visit, I could not enter the old ballpark. I could not go there. It was impossible to go there. That's what we're pointing to. You're in another realm of life, of understanding life beyond understanding life about your own thought systems or belief systems or character or personality. So when I went back and saw my first client, there was no way I could work with the client in the way I did before, using Freudian therapy, whatever it was. I could not do it. It didn't make sense anymore. And I always say that that first client, you know what I said to the first client? I said, you know, are you interested to hear what I have to say? I can't work with you the way I used to, but are you interested in hearing what I had to say? She said, sure. I said, okay, here's what I have to say. Thought creates your feelings. And she said, okay, what else you got? Thought creates your feeling. So I just had that. But here's the beauty. Here's the beauty. When you speak from there, a truth in you that you resonate with, which is really, really beyond your own personal thinking, your own self, more comes. More is available to you. So we just had a nice conversation, and at the end of that conversation, I was able to add a second sentence. You know, and after 7 hours, I had a paragraph, you know. So that's one piece of it, see. So you don't, you're grateful. When you touch that part of what the feeling you can have is gratitude. And you look out and you see what you're grateful for. But you can't go back to that, see. The other piece is, there are people that have these insights that have had nothing. They have nothing. They don't even know about self-help. Cindy Banks had no knowledge. He didn't care about self-help, and he had this deep insight. So that's the other piece. There isn't any format to follow to have an insight. It can happen anywhere.
It's totally unfair.
Yeah.
Yeah. No.
It's a what?
Michael and I went like the hard.
No,
way.
I know. I mean, I always talk about the difference between sort of the Zen path and the Dzogchen path. That, you know, the Zen path to enlightenment is through meditation and practice, and you know, and I call it the orgasm path, because it's like 20 years of foreplay in the lotus position, and if you're lucky, you blossom into enlightenment one day, right? Whereas you know, Dzogchen, the idea in Dzogchen Buddhism is you get a taste, you get a glimpse of the view of the God moment, of the intelligence behind life, of whatever it is before the character got created. And I started thinking I was the character. And there's a really nice feeling that comes with that glimpse. Mm-hmm. It's like when I turned down the volume, I got a glimpse, but I didn't know what I was seeing. And then it's just about increasing over time the duration of that glimpse, the depth of it, and the purity of it. And that's a very different thing, because there's nothing to do. That will just come. As you look in this direction, as you relax into it more, when you start to get just a taste of it, oh, there's nothing to do. Oh, there's nothing wrong to fix. There's nothing I'm particularly moved to improve. I'm okay. Like, not I'm okay and I could be better, I'm just okay. Then that has its own heat. Right? That has its own heat. It bubbles something up in us. You know how is it 212 degrees Fahrenheit when water becomes gas? Something like that. There's a temperature at which ice, solid, becomes water. And then there's another temperature at which water, liquid, becomes gas. And it's like that. 1 degree. Well, it's like just being in this heats it up. And at some point, it hits whatever that critical temperature is, and boom, it's a whole new ballgame. Now, it's all the same stuff. It's all the same energy in different forms. That's why we call it transformation. It changes from one form to another, but essentially, it's one energy. Which is so cool.
I always get to that point, and then I'm like, I don't have a point again. What else?
That's good.
What else are you guys here?
Well, yeah.
Sorry. We could go on.
Yeah.
We will tomorrow.
Anything making sense that you'd like to share? Something making sense to you?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Hopefully something's making sense.
Yes, absolutely. And it's all coming together in a really great way tonight. So thank you both. It reminded me of one of my clients who I've been working with for some time, and she's brilliant, and she's just got a great career ahead of her. She wrote to me this week that she was thinking of putting together a workshop on confidence, because she had none in her mind, which is the craziest thing. Like, I burst out laughing when I saw that. I go, this is someone that's got more confidence and more balls and more whatever, and I can't wait to go back to her, and I haven't had a chance yet, but to tell her she already has it. She just can't see it.
Yeah.
And it's in her, and it's always been in her. And so anyway, that was sort of a reminder today. Thank you.
Cool. Thank you.
That was the excitement for me. Just that kind of thrill that you can go back and speak differently. You know, and speak more to the truth of the matter, maybe more simply. I love that. Each time I would hear more, you know, I was able to go back and talk more simply and more deeply to the truth of the matter. And people are just fabricating that, you know? They're just fabricating they don't have confidence. It's just what we can do. We're all in this human condition together, making up stuff about ourselves, you know, or about other people. And it isn't to stop that, it's just to know what's going on. To know that's just thought in action, and it plays out that way.
You know, I was seeing in 2010, I started Supercoach Academy. And it was still very much this kind of understanding. I was just beginning to see a bit of it. And so it was one of the modules we covered, along with all these different self-improvement things and things to do and practices and techniques and exercises. And by the time 2011 came and we did the second academy, it didn't look that way to me anymore. I was in a new ballpark, and the idea of doing that didn't make any sense. And I actually, funnily enough, think it might have been you, Sarah. I'm not sure if it was. But somebody who'd been there the first year and came back to do the advanced track the second year. So if it's all inside us already and it's just part of our nature and we made it up, why did you teach us to do all that stuff last year? And, you know, all I could think of was, my bad.
Yeah.
And you know what? Somehow I got away with that.
That Steve Martin thing. Well, excuse me.
You know? But you know, we get away with it because there's an innocence to it.
Yeah.
There's an innocence to it. We don't do it for any reason other than it really looks that way to us and then it
looks
doesn't.
That way. Yeah.
That's it. You know? Great. Barbie.
That's the virtual track. Yeah, I went to one of Michael's Thrive retreats, and we had to write a letter to our future selves, and I said to Michael, and he wanted us to read it in front of the class, and I said, Michael, I can't read it because in fifth grade I had to stand in front of the whole class and I couldn't speak. I was stuttering. I was turning red and sweating. And then Michael says to me, he goes, that's why you're going first. And I did read it. And now I'm have groups of people come to my house and talk about the three principles. And it's been wonderful. And I was invited to my daughter's school, Sonoma State. And I talked to her team about the three principles. And They loved it, and they want me to come back next year. And so I know the thought, you know, it's just creating these little monsters. But I know if I just kind of speak through my wisdom, it just comes through, and it's beautiful.
And yeah. Notice that's not about courage. Maybe the first time. That's just about, well, it's just not scary. Mm-hmm. It's just, you know, it really looked scary, and so I needed a strategy to be confident. But, well, if it's just not scary, why do I need a strategy to be confident? And that's what winds up happening, is we just stop making it up the way we've been making it up. And suddenly we've got a whole nother level of freedom without it looking like we did anything, because we didn't. We just stopped making it up the way we've made it up. We didn't even really do that. It just stopped making itself up. It stopped looking real at another level. And, you know, this is why I offer I'll be very upfront. I have a money-back guarantee for every program. If your head explodes, at any point, you get your money back. I've never actually had to enact it. But that's what we're afraid of. Right? It feels like our head will explode if we do this thing that we cannot do. If I go ask that person for money, if I go, you know, ask that person for a date, if I go do this thing, my head's going to explode. Well, honest to God, if you're right and I'm wrong, my bad. Right? You can have your feedback. You know, I should probably double your money back, really. I did not legitimate. Right? But that's the thing. Is it feels so real when we're in it. And we have a story. We always do. We all do. We have our story of why it's that way. Whether it's our childhood, something that happened to us, it's our character. We inherited this. It's our brain chemistry. It's this, it's that, it's the other. I'm not saying that those things aren't necessarily true about the factual thing, but yeah. they don't cause anything. Yeah. It's like, what was George's thing? That overflowing storm sewers cause umbrellas to open? Right? Because every time you see storm drains overflowing, there are all these open umbrellas that just aren't open when storm drains aren't overflowing. So clearly, right? Life looks like that until it doesn't.
Yeah. I know. This is a really beautiful point, too. This is a beautiful point to just get a feel for. It could look like she got to another place around being afraid to share by doing that exercise. And what we're speaking to is that something happened while she was doing that exercise. Her thoughts changed. See, that's what helped. That's what it was. Now, and she didn't change her thinking. It just occurred. That's the piece here, that you don't have to worry about doing anything. It's out of the doing ballpark. See, I'll tell you a story about this that I just saw recently. Well, I've been traveling a lot in the last 3 years, and some of it thanks to Michael, who has included me in some of his things. So people in the UK have gotten to know me and asked me to come over and teach. Well, you can ask my wife. I'm a nervous Nelly before going to the airport. Oh, my God, I'm just so nervous. And I am teaching people that feeling comes through thought. But it doesn't help me. You know, I'm still a nervous Nelly. And so I'm just living with it. This is just me. But I'm living with it. I'm not trying to do anything about it. I'm trying to see, hopefully, I may see something about this eventually. Because it doesn't feel good. I know I'm nervous. I know I must be thinking about it some way. But I'm still nervous. So I go to the airport for a trip to New York to do a weekend seminar. I'm sitting in the boarding area, and they announce, the plane's delayed for an hour. There's a mechanical problem. Okay, I have a magazine. I'm reading a magazine. They come on and say, well, this mechanical problem should have been taken care of overnight, and it wasn't. We're going to have to take the plane back to the shop, and we have to find everybody a new plane. It may take a while. So I'm listening to that. I'm sitting there. All of a sudden, I realized I'm as calm. I'm so peaceful. I'm peaceful. And all of a sudden, I'm in this calm state that I've been looking for around being a nervous Nelly. And it stayed. It stayed the whole day. I was a different person. It was a 3-hour delay. I went for coffee, I talked to people, and I was in this whole different state. And, you know, again, it spoke to me about how change or how where you'd like to be just shows up. It's really something beyond you. But it can happen. And, this was like the flight out of hell. I've traveled a lot. I never had a troubled flight. But going into New York, they were going to divert. Here we are already, like, it's already midnight. We started at 8:30 in the morning. And we're just getting into JFK, and they say, we may have to divert this plane because of thunderstorms. And everybody's kind of like, and I'm calm. And it's not a doing thing. I don't know. I don't even know why it's still with me. I guess the whole point of the story is just to share that one of the things about living in the realm, in the world of realizations, and keeping to point yourself toward this spiritual understanding is that you don't have to keep thinking about yourself and trying to force yourself to change, even though there are areas that you'd like to get better about. At some point, you may see something that will help you. And when you do see something, it will have already taken place. And then you could live in that level of higher level of consciousness. So it's something that occurs for you rather than it being something that you're doing.
Now, I spoke on the radio this week about a shift like that. When I left London, I had this card, like an angel card, but it was sayings of old Chinese. He was a channeled entity or something. I don't really still understand all that, but it was a great saying. And it said, anything is possible, providing that you remember that you're God. And there was something about it that I felt, it didn't sit in the good idea, neat idea, horrible idea category. There was something that felt true about it. But because I lived in this ballpark, because this was my world, I worked really hard to remind myself. I set up reminders. I carried that card around with me. I put it up. I wrote it down places. Oh, yeah, okay, remember that I'm God. Remember that I'm God. Remember that I'm God. Right. Yeah. Oh, shoot, I'm going to forget that I'm God. Okay, I need to get people to call me and tell me that I... It's 7:15 and you're God. Okay. Slip them a fiver, they'll do anything. Well, one day, for no apparent reason, I heard it different. I heard it as just true. That when you remember that you are not your character, that you are something before and beyond that, you are the space out of which characters are birthed and back into which they disappear. You are this intelligence. You are God. You are universal mind. You are that. Well, when I'm in touch with that, anything is possible. Because I'm in a space that's before form. So now it didn't become a good idea or a practice. Providing you remember that you're God. Did you remember that you were God today, Timmy? Forgot, Mom. Thanks for my sandwich. And I'm God. Right? That's what it looked like to me. And then suddenly it wasn't a doing anymore.
Yeah.
It was just like, oh yeah. I woke up to it. And once you wake up to it, doesn't mean you won't fall asleep to it again.
Yeah.
But you're done. And then you fall asleep again, and then you wake up to it again. You know, I was joking with David. I have been having a lot of insights that I've already had. So it's been a very insight-rich couple of weeks for me. And every single one of them I had years ago. Like I woke up again to things. And half of them are in the Inside Out Revolution. Like it was like, oh, thought creates feeling. Oh, no, that's in chapter 3. Or like, oh my gosh, there's this amazing space we can operate. Oh, being online, chapter 9. You know, and I'm going through, and I finally got to the point where I was saying, you know, it's like if I write a sequel at this point, it's going to have to be called No, Really. Because I got nothing new. But I just keep seeing it at deeper levels.
Mm-hmm.
And that's my experience of what this is like. It's like, you know, the same things come up, but they're different. You know, I've heard Sid say, I don't remember where, that, you know, at each new level of consciousness, the same thoughts will come up, but you'll just experience them less and less as real and more as thought. It's not that they go away. It's just they don't have the same juice that they used to have. And some of them do go away. Some of them don't. Do you remember the movie A Beautiful Mind? I loved the way that his hallucinations, his imaginary friends, even when he was accepting his Nobel Prize, they were right there in the front row, but he just didn't feel the need to have a relationship with them anymore. They never went away. There's a beautiful moment, one of my favorite moments in the movie, where the guy comes in from the committee to tell him that he's been nominated for the Nobel Prize and goes out and he stops a student in the hall and he says,
did you see that guy? He's not quite sure. And I've always thought, yeah, that's what it feels like sometimes.
Yeah.
It's like, did that really just happen, or was that all up here? Yeah. You know. Yeah.
Michael, I'm Jay, and a few minutes ago I felt like you made light of the encoding that we all have, our families of origin. Frankly, at the DNA and epigenetic level, we're encoded with certain negative messages, messages that were not God, in fact. And both of you have been describing what I would call a gestational period. Your gestational period lasted longer than his gestational period. And I think a lot of us would know, what can we do to speed up our own individual gestation to reach the moments that both of you have reached? How do we overcome that encoding that we have? And that encoding, by the way, is real. It's been documented that encoding is real at the epigenetic and DNA level. But we all want to try and overcome that at some point as well. I think we all want to have the God moment that you're talking about and to be able to sustain it. And I think one of the reasons why we're all here is to learn from both of you what we can do to move that process forward, if you will.
So I can speak to some of that. And I have to speak slightly sideways because I don't know what you're talking about. Like, at the, in terms of the, I don't know the detail of it, so I don't want to pretend that I do. But let me say what I was saying. You tell me if it fits. So I was having a conversation with somebody the other day about tiredness and state of mind. And they were saying, look, my tiredness is real. I haven't slept. My body needs sleep. It is known that the body functions differently when it doesn't sleep than when it sleeps. It's measurable. So how can you say that I can have, that my state of mind operates independent of that? And here's what it looks like to me. And then, like I say, you tell me if this is relevant at all to what you're saying. The body is the old part of the created world. It is after the fact of thought. And once you're in the world of form, you're subject to the rules of the world of form. Right? Physics is how the physical world works. So once you're in the physical world, physics applies. I got this thing, it's going to fall over if I don't hold it up. Now, so one of the things that I know about, you know, the brain is that, you know, the reaction time is impaired. It's not the same when the brain hasn't had sleep and certain nourishment as when it does. However, when I am connected to the God place, to this deeper self, it doesn't ever seem to me difficult to take that lowered reaction time into account. It's not that I don't have it, but it doesn't occur to me as a separate problem. It's simply part of the accounting that takes place in the calculation in how I do what I do. So for me, the fact that there may well be encoding and as I said, I don't want to go too much into it because I don't know. That doesn't negate access to this before form, to this formless energy. It simply exists within it. And that's why I, in my experience, you don't have to take it into account as a separate factor. From this place, you will automatically take it into account because it's part of the created. So we're really talking about two different worlds that exist simultaneously, the formless and the form. Is that relevant to...
No, I think it absolutely is. And I think the question then becomes getting in touch with the formless.
because we do have neural pathways, we do have other thoughts, we do have negative messages that keep us from appreciating who we are or who other people see who we are. And so it's, if you will, the process of getting in touch with that formless part. That, and I think that we'd all like assistance, if you will, in getting in touch with that formless part.
Well, I can tell you where it is. It's underneath this conversation. It's not in it. It's the space inside which this conversation is unfolding. I don't know if that's helpful or not.
Sure.
But if you hear it differently.
Well, you know, I think for me, the fact of thought, the fact that you can create, that creative energy is before your physical form. It's before your brain. It uses the brain, but it's before your brain. That's why you can have an insight that changes the impact of childhood. You could have a very damaging childhood, one that made you afraid of life, a very insecure person. And you get an insight that that's just created through this power we have to create thinking. You transcend the, whatever got encoded with that. You can transcend it. You could start to see your childhood peacefully with understanding for the human beings involved and come to peace with any trauma you've experience and it never have an impact on you again. So there's something we're pointing to that can go beyond what happens in life to us physically, because these are spiritual principles that create our experience of life moment to moment.
How does that play out in addiction? Because I know that's a lot of your work has been in that, you know, working with addiction. Because addiction, there's a physical part to it.
I was going to add one more thing.
Sorry.
So there's good news and bad news. Tonight, I think we all saw there's this beautiful space in us that we can touch. Spiritually touch, not physically touch. And when we do, we get a nice feeling. We get a little different thinking. And it can wake up knowledge that allows us to transcend the history that could be encoded. Now, when I heard that from Sydney Banks, I didn't get it. I couldn't make it happen. But he said something that helped me. He said, that is pure love and understanding. It's pure love and understanding. That's the energy. Now, when I heard that, I said, I can do that. I can do love and understanding, see? But really, you can't make a realization of what we're pointing to happen. If you've had a nice feeling about it tonight, you've got something. See, if you're sitting here and you just had a nice feeling, something resonated with you, it made sense, you did get something. It is not at the intellectual level you're going to get something. If we're looking at alcohol and drug addiction, there's truly some physiological addiction that takes place. You know, it is defined in those terms, in terms of the body's response to this ongoing use. But what I point to for people with addiction is it's an innocent human way to find this. Addiction is an innocent human way to find what Michael and I are pointing to. Everybody wants to realize the true nature of what they are. Everybody wants the feeling of that. But like what we're saying, if you're out in the world of self-help, self-improvement, that's where you look, right, for the feeling. See, if you're out in the old baseball park, then you look out there for the feeling. That's what I talk to people about. Help them see they're looking for the same thing that is in them right now. I had a woman so stressed out from work every day talk to me about how when she got home, she would sit in front of the TV and go to these shopping networks we have over here, you know, these shopping networks, and buy stuff. And she felt great. She just had a, oh man, she felt so relaxed. She had a good feeling. Then she could get up and go about the rest of the evening. Well, I said, how's that working for you? Well, she said, it's not too good right now. I said, why not? Well, she says, I can't, when I go out on a date, I can't invite my date back up to my apartment. I said, why not? She says, well, because there's boxes from Home Shopping Network and QVC all over the place, and I have to just sleep on one half of the bed. There's the innocence of it. And all that is helpful is the same thing we're looking at. When she could wake up to the fact that what she's looking for is already there, and that she could understand that the addiction was really just thought created, it just looked like that was what was making her feel better to do that. While she was doing that, actually, she just kind of quieted her mind. And that's why she felt better. Then she could transcend that. Then she can transcend all the learning that took place from her history. Now, that physiologically something could happen, but even when people talk about cravings, I talk to them about that's just a thought. It's just a thought. It really is. You feel something in your body, you've been told that's cravings, or you get an urge, you feel that in your body, you've been told that's cravings, and then if you engage it, it becomes true. It starts to drive you. It starts to work with you. But if you understand, that's just a thought. And if you leave it alone for a while, it passes. Just like any thought we have. So that's what I tell people who have addictions. You see, that the truth of the matter is no different. We would talk no differently because once people wake up to this truth, they have a realization of the truth, their wisdom takes over. Their wisdom takes over. What we're telling you is what our wisdom has shared with us. But you'll find your own way. You'll find your own way. So people will come up and say, oh yeah, I really saw that. And now I see I'm thinking too much. I got to slow that down. That's their way. I had a really cute story. I'm working with a young man. He's got tremendous amounts of anxiety. And we've had a great rapport. So he tells me, he comes in the other day and he says, you're the only person I can talk to because, I don't know, you just really seem to have some good ideas and they make sense for me and I can use them, and everybody else I talk to tells me to do things. So I want you to see, I need help with my girlfriend. And I said, well, tell me, what do you mean? She said, well, I picked up my girlfriend the other day and she's saying, I don't know if we could stay together. I don't know, I'm just so troubled, I'm just so nervous about everything. I don't know if we could stay together. And he's telling me, well, I thought, you know what? Why don't I let her just kind of go through this? This is just her thinking. Why don't I just let her go through this? And then he says, then I thought, you know, Dr. Howard, maybe I'll just be of support while she's going through this with me in the car. And so he's just supporting her. And then she says, we have so many differences, you know. And, you know, I like these things, you like those things. And then he says to me, then I just said to her, well, I'm a guy. It's just that I'm a guy. I like to get dirty, so I go out dirt biking. I like to fish. It doesn't mean anything about the two of us. That's just me as a guy. And then he said, now, what would you say? And I said, I couldn't do anything better than what you came up with. You did perfectly. There's his wisdom. Right? There's his wisdom. He found his way. You know, and so I'm just, so we just talked about it and kind of had just talked more about it, you know, but he had his own wisdom. It came out that way. I didn't tell him ever about that. All I told him is, where is his experience coming from? Where's his anxiety coming from? Where's his experience of his girlfriend coming from? From the way he's thinking. And as that played out for him through a realization there, before he would go into a panic attack hearing that stuff. And now he had these very wise ways to help her. At the end of the drive, I said, well, okay, now you got to tell me, how did it end? Please tell me, how did all of this end? You know, you were so wise, but did it do anything for you, you know? And he said, oh, yeah, it did, you know, because I left her off and she had to go, I was just taking her somewhere for an hour. She came back to the car and she said, oh, man, I'm so sorry about all of that, you know. So it helped her. And they just kind of went about their way together.
How many of you are coming tomorrow? Okay, what we're going to be talking about tomorrow is our relationship with that. Our relationship with that wisdom. And how when you start to see that it's always available, that does something for the relationship. It changes the way that we experience it. It becomes more every day. It becomes more ordinary. And in becoming more ordinary, it becomes much more accessible. And then Jackie.
Okay.
And
then we'll probably have to run. Michael, if I can just share, a couple of years ago, I felt much the same way that Jay just did about saying, how do I speed this up, or how do I get there? And I remember you said something that I didn't hear you say tonight that really helped me, and that was, we just keep looking in that direction. Mm. You remember saying that?
It sounds like the kind of thing I say.
But I thought at the time, yeah, right, okay. But it's really true. It's almost like the mood thing. You know, I can just wake up another day and be in a different mood, and I kind of get it. And I didn't realize that was going to change.
Where that comes from for me as a seeing, I remember when I first got that, was somebody was talking to me about bird watching. Like, they loved bird watching. And they were saying, well, the trick to bird watching is knowing where the birds live. And if you know where the birds live, sooner or later you'll see the bird. But if you don't know where the birds live, you'll just keep looking and looking and looking, and you'll by the time you get back to where the birds actually live, they've gone again. And it seems to me that's if we know where to look, if we start to get a sense for where this is, and it's not out there, and it's not in here, and it's not in the words, then we will see faster, because we're only looking in one direction. We're not looking all over the place trying to find it quicker. I'm sure I have said that other times, but it's, in a way, you know, I sometimes joke that our job as people who sit up at the front of the room in this understanding is to do this. And to find enough different ways of doing this that people stay interested long enough to actually look where we're pointing and not at our finger and, you know, and at some point they look, and everybody sees once they actually look. in my experience. Haven't lost one yet. But plenty of people find amazingly creative ways of not looking for extended periods of time. And that, you know, in a way for me, I just kind of figure I just got to outlast them. Sooner or later, one of us is going to get worn down, and I'm pretty resilient. You know?
Yeah. You know, I was sitting one day very early in my understanding of this in 1982 with a colleague of ours, George Pransky, at his house in Oakland. And we had just finished meeting with a client. We're sitting in his couch looking out the window. And he said, you know, if our thinking really quieted down, and we were pretty quiet, we were pretty relaxed. If our thinking really quieted down, life would fill us so much, it would be overwhelming. And that's it. Right now, we're sitting in it. Right now, we're in it already. We're not for the thinking we're doing. Us too. Up here, we're in a lot of thinking, you know. But we're in it right now. And my best guide, and this is just me, it's my guide, is a good feeling. You're having a good feeling. You're in it. You're there. That's why when Sid said love and understanding, that helped me. It was very easy for me to keep looking in that direction. But honestly, it's not up to us. I wish I was meeting with a couple, and the husband's saying to me, I wish we could get this. I wish we could get this. Isn't there something we could do? I said, you know what? Why don't you run around the block 4 times and let's see if we get it, you know? You can't, it's like, you know, this just occurred to me. Really, there's an innocence to this. Once you start to see something here, you just want it. I know I did. You just want it. And you want to be able to live more in it. But the minute I start looking, I'm out of it. I'm thinking it's something to go get rather than something I already am. And you look into a good feeling. It's never a bad feeling because you truly are pure love. So it's never a bad feeling. It's always a good feeling.
I remember one of the first lines I wrote in a book that I thought, yeah, that's true. And it was it was about how do you spot the difference between wisdom and the noise. And it had come to me in a session, kind of like you. That's where they always come in the middle of an actual session. The still small voice within doesn't think you suck. And that's the same thing that I just hear Mark saying, is it's never going to come as an admonition. It's never going to come as a judgment. It's never going to come as something that you need to work on. It's just the feeling of life without all the noise. We're going to sneak Jackie in. We'll try and sneak you in, and then we're going to have to call it for the night.
I loved what you said about the innocence, because I realize that I have like no compassion for my humanness at this point. I'm spending more time there, and then sometimes some given shows up, and it like hooks on the end and just tilts it up, so it's over there. And what that looks like to me is, how can I possibly be feeling this way at this point? You know? And there are times when I've begun to be able to, like, it's this thing going on at the same time where I'm nuts, but the other thing is there. And it's like, it's like being in love. It's like being a little bit thrilled all the time, no matter what else is going on. But I want to be able to it's almost as if I'm feeling more now, that things are more extreme. But I don't want to, I want the human parts too. I want the feeling. And it's, there's something you were saying at the end that kind of, I'm just thinking, if that is all inside of what we're really talking about, then that's love too.
Well, there's a lot there, and we'll cover a lot tomorrow with what you said. You shared a lot there. And you shared how, you know, you can't get away from your humanness. What I mean by humanness is you're nuts, and then you're insightful. Everybody is. Everybody's nuts. Everybody's insightful. It's the bane of being in life. But the beauty is, like Michael said, when you catch on to this, somehow it's, you know something, even though you're nuts. You know something, it's, you know there, that isn't really the case. And what I mean by the innocence of that is you finally come to an understanding that you have nothing to do with what you're going to be the next moment. You have nothing to do with that. If I'm insecure the next moment, I have Mark Howard has nothing to do with that. That's just a thought that got created, and I'm in it. I'm in it. And being able to understand what happens with that means that at some point along that creation, I'm going to wake up to what created that. And I'll be different. So we're always like Dr. Jekyll and Mr. and Ms. Hyde. You can't get away from it. But the understanding allows you to know that, but also live at higher levels of consciousness. To start to welcome into your life peace and creativity and happiness and well-being. I want to share. Do I have time for a story?
A quickie. And we'll talk after. We'll talk after.
Well, let's let her talk. I forget. Let's let her.
Honestly, we're not going to be able to let her talk anyway. Okay. So at least we'll get your story.
Well, I just wanted to share with. I've shared this before. Why it came to mind was the story of me being nuts and me waking up very quickly doing the same thing. So it's a Sunday. I kind of get in an argument with my wife. I say, I'm getting out of here. So I get in the car, I'm going to go for a drive, I'm getting out of here. And I get to the end of the driveway, and it's left. I'm no longer angry, I'm no longer upset. I'm feeling, oh, what an idiot, you got all caught up in something, and it's gone. So I was nuts, and I woke up. Now I'm feeling good. I'm feeling, oh man, let's go say you're sorry, let's go enjoy TV together, you know? And then I'm thinking, wait a minute here. I'm going to lose faith if I go back in right now. Because I said I'm going to be away for an hour. Yeah. That was the funny part of the story.
You'll learn if you haven't spent time with Mark. We do this. We set up signals. Right hand is Mark's telling a joke now. You know.
So that's nuts. And then, you know, get your spirits back. Get your wisdom back.
You know, I just as a closing thought from me, I used to describe it a lot, and this is how it feels to me, like being on a roller coaster that's on a boat that's floating down a river. And sometimes the roller coaster is going, and sometimes it's not. But whether it's going or not, we're always on a boat floating down a river. And it's just sometimes easier to notice when the roller coaster's not going so much. But sometimes you can notice it even when the roller coaster's going crazy. And that's the gift of consciousness. That's what consciousness does for us, is it lets us be on the roller coaster and still know that we're in the river. Thank you.
Yeah.
Very much. Thank you for everyone who stayed awake or woke up early.
Yeah, thank you. Nice
tomorrow,
to have you here.
Virtual people. We're going to do a special lunchtime session with you guys. So there'll be a chance for you to ask questions of Mark and I. We'll sit down with you online, and that'll all be explained tomorrow. And if you're here, you'll get to go have lunch and be with us for the rest of the time. So I love doing these. We're going to do more of them next year. We're going to try and do them at least every other month. I just really appreciate you guys coming down. So that's
I want to thank you, too. And I could really hear the listening you've done and the respect you have for what we have to share and give. And the appreciation. I really appreciate your presence. So thank you. It was really a lot of fun.
Thanks, guys.